So, Matt, how is this performance of Midsummer Night's Dream different from the one you put on last summer?
Well, we had the great opportunity to bring the show to Theater for the New City in the East Village. They were interested in what we did last summer, and we had a lot thrown at us at the last moment when we did the production last summer and had to make a lot of revisions last moment. And a lot of the changes we made improved the show. Some of the things that happened we thought could have been done differently. And given an opportunity to do it again, we thought we would really allow this to be its own thing. I'm not particularly interested in remounts. As a theater artist, why do it again exactly the same way? We're living in a slightly different time. Things have changed since last we did the show. The Marriage Equality Act made its way through the New York State Senate. So the landscape that we're looking at now is slightly different. And as a result, we wanted to try to look at ways that we would be able to incorporate that, and also some of the things that we were hoping to do in the first production that we couldn't, such as some of the more magical aspects of the forest we wanted to bring more fully into this production. So we have, of the original cast, all but one of the original cast are returning, and we've had a really great time working with them. We've done some slight cast changes in the first production. The ensemble of Titania's fairies like Peas, Blossom, and Cobweb, and Moth, and all of those folks were played by an ensemble of actor-dancers. For this production, we have an ensemble of actor-dancers, but they are simply there to help to create the atmosphere, and all of the named fairies are actually doubled by the actors playing the mechanicals, so that all of the scenes with Bottom in the forest end up becoming this kind of Wizard of Oz-like experience where he is talking to people who look just like the people that he knows in real life, but everything here is different. And so it is a bit of an homage to the Wizard of Oz in that way. And also in the forest, we wanted to bring in more of the magical aspect and thought a lot about how to do that. And in rereading the play again between when we did it last summer and when we thought we were going to do this again at Theater for the New City, I noticed how often the word shadows comes up in the play. Puck refers to Oberon as the King of Shadows, his very famous final speech, "If we shadows have offended," it comes up again and again. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, what if we were to use some shadow puppetry as a way to be able to bring to life the various transformations that Puck goes into and creating some of the illusions that are referred to in the script. Puck has a long speech as he's chasing the mechanicals saying, "Sometimes I'll be a hound and a hog and a headless bear," and all of these things. And I thought, well, if we want to bring more magic into the play, then maybe we can find ways of using shadow puppetry and illusion to bring these things to life visually. And that's another big change from the last time around.
So do you feel like it gives the performance like a more depth, a more polish than the last time around?
Yeah. It's definitely more polished in that we've already done it once. So we learned a lot of lessons from that and were able to kind of pull what we felt worked and work on the things that we felt didn't work. And it, I think, has a much greater nuance than it did previously. I think that between the shadow puppets, the in-depth work that the actors have been able to do, having already done a rehearsal process and a performance process on the show, and then to be able to come back to it again and explore it even more deeply, I think has definitely brought a lot of depth to it.
I mean, not a lot of directors work with the same cast on like almost the same performance in a way. Have you grown very close with them?
Well, yeah. Most of them are members of the Hive Theater Company, which I artistic direct. Mm-hmm. And one of the things about the Hive is we're a collective. It's not a traditional hierarchical theater company. It's also not a member company. It's kind of its own thing. It's collectively owned by everybody who is a member, and we're very democratic. A lot of the decisions that are made about what shows we do and how shows are approached are based on groupthink. Mm-hmm. And as a director, I feel like my job is to help and shape and sculpt and edit the choices that they're making as artists, actors, designers, and so on. And through that, trying to create a quilt work of a story that has integrity to it. And so as a director, I have a vision, but we're very, very collaborative in the truest sense of the word, not in the way that it often shows up, which is more capitulation. Mm-hmm. We really are truly collaborative so that the actors talk to the designers about the choices that they're making, and actors can feel free to say to a lighting designer or a sound designer, hey, I heard this song and I thought it'd be really great in the piece, or what would you think about doing this with lighting? And the same is true with our designers. The designers feel comfortable in talking to the actors about their acting, and it's very, very collaborative in that way.
Okay, so you said that you've made changes, like, you know, to kind of, you've learned from, not your mistakes, but you've just learned from the original.
Oh, no, they were mistakes.
Okay.
The art-making process is full of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't find what works unless you make mistakes. And we made some mistakes in the first production. And inevitably, we're going to make some mistakes in this one. It's
mm-hmm.
part of the process. I don't think we're aiming for perfection so much as trying to find the best way of telling the story. And from the last production, there were things that didn't quite work. Like I said before, there were a lot of things that changed at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, in the first production, we were going to do the court scenes indoors and the forest scenes in the garden theater at the Cell, where we did the original production. But due to some very... intense neighbor reactions, we had to bring the show indoors. And as a result, we had to do a lot of reblocking, and a lot of the more magical moments we were hoping to create in the outdoor space had to be cut. So we learned from that. We also found that the play, even though we had made cuts, was much longer than we wanted it to be. Shakespeare's plays, unabridged, are very difficult for audiences to sit through because we're just simply not used to that kind of a time span.
Mm-hmm.
Most people cannot sit through a 3.5 to 4.5 hour play
mm-hmm.
in the modern world. And I'm not passing judgment, it's just a fact. So we cut the play in the hopes of getting it down to close to 2 hours. But even with the cuts we made, the play still ran over 2.5 hours. And although it was really well received, many of our reviews and audience response was, we loved it, it just felt a little long. So one of the things we tried to do this time around was to try to really streamline the play and make sure that it's at its running weight. So now we're down to 2 hours, and I think that people will enjoy it just as much as they did the last, but it will feel more complete an event. We don't want anybody leaving thinking, oh, I wish it was 20 minutes shorter.
Uh-huh. I remember last time, in our last interview, you were talking about how you made some changes to the iambic pentameter and things like that. What I was trying to say before is, like, considering the other changes that you've made in this edition, have you made more changes to the actual dialogue in this one?
Well, when we looked at the play originally, in order for us to be able to approach it the way we wanted to, which was to look at the central conflict of the play, which is, for Shakespeare, choice in marriage specifically for women. Hermia being forced to marry Demetrius, Hippolyta being forced to marry Theseus, and then in the fairy world, Titania and Oberon's conflict. And the way that we approached it had the lovers be Hermia and Lysander being women, and Demetrius and Helena being men. The central conflict became about choice in marriage, specifically gay marriage. So in order to do that, we had to change words so that we could make it gender-specific to the characters as we saw them, and it did mean some slight alteration in the text. We really worked very hard to keep the meter, but there's a big difference between saying daughter and son,
mm-hmm.
because one has two syllables and the other has one. So we did have to make alterations in the text to be able to stay true to the meter and to the new genders of the characters. So I think that the alterations we made to the text itself, by and large, there aren't that many more. Maybe a couple here and there. However, we have made more cuts in
mm-hmm.
order to get the show down, you know, almost 40 minutes shorter than it was previously. We have done a lot of internal cuts, which can be tricky, especially with Shakespeare, because
mm-hmm.
so many of his, especially longer speeches, are building an argument. And in order to maintain that argument while still making cuts is very, very difficult. But I think we've been fairly successful.
So considering the fact that you pretty much had your cast all set up and you kind of knew what you wanted to fix and what you wanted to add, was that kind of the painstaking process of, like, finding, like, the exact right places to cut and really, like, make this as digestible?
Absolutely. Yeah, we started in December. In December, we sat down with the script that we used in the last production. brought together as many of the cast members as we could, knowing we'd be using them again, and read through the play. And as we read through, I sat there with a pen and just marked down everything that I felt was not forwarding the action of the play immediately. Some things are easy cuts because Shakespeare is repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
His audiences needed to hear things more than once, in large part because he was working in a theater without sound amplification. It was not unusual to have conversations going on during his plays in his own time.
Mm-hmm.
So audiences needed to be reminded of important facts. Our audiences don't.
Mm-hmm.
He also had no real scenery to speak of. So he has long descriptions of places in order to be able to set it up in the audience's imagination. We live in a much more visual culture where having somebody describe it and then showing it to them makes little sense. So a lot of the cuts had to do with a character talking about leaving and then leaving. We cut them talking about leaving and just have them leave so that it then becomes much more fast-paced. And I think that, by and large, that's worked. But it was a very slow process of reading through, making cuts, doing another read-through, and finding we've only shaved 12 minutes off the play, and then doing another one. And I think we had in all maybe 4 or 5 versions until we finally got it down to the one we've been rehearsing.
Wow. Is there anything else that you want to say about the production? And then lastly, tell us when it's playing, how people could find out more about it.
Well, yeah. I think, you know, I've been working in the theater as a designer and an actor and a director for almost 20 years now. And I have worked on a lot of shows. This is one that I'm very, very proud of. Not only because it was successful the first time and is being brought back, you know, and not only because it got great reviews and audiences loved it, but because this is a play that I think everyone knows and loves, but that we've done something with that is very different and that will get people excited about Shakespeare again. For me, the best comments we got about the last production were not from critics, were not from Shakespeare scholars, all of whom still liked it,
mm-hmm.
but was from people who came up to me or to another cast member afterwards and said, I don't like Shakespeare, but I like this. And that's exactly what we want to do. And so I think that regardless of whether people are Shakespeare aficionados or they hear the word Shakespeare and cringe, they're going to like this show. It's fun. It's sexy. It's hot. It's a blast. Where to find tickets? We're going to be at Theater for the New City from April 25th through May 19th. Tickets are available online at SmartTix. The easiest thing to do is to go to the Hive Theater's website. It's www.thehivetheater, spelled R-E, not E-R, .com. You can also Google us, The Hive Theater, and find our website. And there's a full listing of all of the various performances with links based on the performance you want to go see to get your tickets. Tickets are $25 general admission, $20 for students and seniors. And there is a bar. So if you are of age, you can come and enjoy a nice alcoholic beverage while watching Shakespeare, which is the way that the original viewers of Shakespeare would have watched it. So we're all for having our audiences enjoy themselves in every way they can.